still that. But as far as this one, as far as answering the test, the questions that I had is, are you still going to continue to play Wisconsin basketball? How do they guard the first, you know, 8 minutes? We saw Monday night, Thursday night, much better. Much, much better. Following the game plan that's in place, they did all of that.
And efficient offensively, according to our stat service, 1.2 points per possession. Montana State, a shade better than 1 point per possession. Both teams running some good stuff tonight. The Badgers end up 12 points better, 79-67. We'll have more of our Badgers postgame show brought to you by your local Wisconsin Ford dealers. Before we throw to a commercial break, let's first pause 10 seconds for station identification. 10 for an ID. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Wisconsin 79, Montana State 67. We'll have more of our Wisconsin Ford Dealers postgame show coming up with Butchie's Breakdown back in a couple of minutes. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Shannon.
Together, we're Twin Stunts, the only twin motorcycle freestyle show in the world. We are born and raised in Wisconsin, so we want all our fellow cheeseheads to know that even though we clutch it up, hit 12, and drift in our show, we would never do it on the open road. And there's another thing we would never do on the road. Drive drunk. Drive sober. Or get pulled over. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov. Wisconsin DOT.
To be a Badger, it takes dedication, perseverance, and an unstoppable drive for excellence. Our team at UW Health Sports Medicine is no different. We bring the same fierce Badger spirit to every surgery, therapy, and training, working tirelessly to keep Wisconsin's athletes at the top of their game. Whether it's nailing the game-winning shot or delivering top-tier care, UW Madison and UW Health are a dream team committed to achieving greatness. Together, we don't just deliver, we dominate. UW Health. Remarkable.
At U.S. Bank, when they say they're in it with you, they mean it. Not just for the good stuff, the grand openings and celebrations, although those are pretty great, but for all the hard work it took to get there, the fine-tuning of goals, the managing of cash and workflows and decision-making. They're in to help you through all of it. Because together they're proving day in and day out that there is nothing as powerful as the power of us. Visit usbank.com to get started today. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC, copyright 2024, U.S. Bank.
The big game, family, friends. We know you count on Alliant Energy to deliver the safe, reliable energy you need, whether you're watching the game, cooking your famous burger, or leaving a light on for loved ones. For us, it means going beyond the expected to make sure we're planning for the energy you need today and tomorrow. That way, you can keep your eye on the ball and focus on what's most important to you. Find out more at AlliantEnergy.com/poweringbeyond.
Hey, Badger fans. Basketball season is here, and SeatGeek is here to help you experience all the action. SeatGeek makes it easy to find tickets so you can be a part of all the courtside celebrations this season. Whether you're buying or selling tickets to Wisconsin basketball games or to any other live event in your area, SeatGeek is the place to do it. SeatGeek is the official ticket marketplace of the Wisconsin Badgers. The most disruptive idea in ticketing? A ticket that works. Expect the expected. SeatGeek.
Badger fans, the final home matchup at Camp Randall Stadium is just around the corner, and it's a big one. This Black Friday, Badger football takes on Minnesota in a battle for Paul Bunyan's axe. Great tickets remain for the border battle matchup, but they're going fast. Don't miss out on your chance to be in the stands. Secure your seats for November 29th. For more information and to get your tickets, visit uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. That's uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS. Don't wait. Get your spot today.
Our Wisconsin Ford Dealers postgame show rolling on as the Badgers defeat Montana State tonight, 79-67. What you got for your Butchie's Breakdown tonight?
Well, first we're going to start at the free throw line. 20 of 21 coming off of a 16 for 16 performance on Monday. If you do the math real quick, I need 5 minutes, right? I believe it was...
I think so. What do you got?
Or it's 36 for 37.
That's pretty good.
Hey! But over two games, they're getting to the free throw line a lot, which is something that every good Wisconsin team has done. Mm-hmm. This team is doing that. 11 of 22 from three, 50% for the three-point line. We've talked about wanting to shoot more and do and kind of get there more often and take quality shots. They're starting to do that. One of those things they're working on. Something that's been part of every great Wisconsin team has been transition defense. They gave up their first basket with 3 minutes left in the game, and it was going to be one of those keys, knowing Montana State wanted to get out, find easy threes. They didn't give up any of them until 3 minutes left in that game. And the last thing, what has made Wisconsin basketball great for so many years? Balance. Mm-hmm. Balance.
For sure.
And that's what you're starting to get. When you look at Tanja with 13, Klusman with 26, Blackwell with 13, McGee with 11, you're starting to have other guys step up. Tanjay was on Monday. Now it was Klusman on Thursday. Sunday, I have a funny feeling it's going to be somebody else. And you're starting to see that with this team yet again. And that's why every Wisconsin team, for as long as I can remember, as long as I played, that they're, the best teams had that balance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You don't know who to stop. You don't know who to go after. And I think this team is two games into it. But they're starting to show bits and pieces of what has made Wisconsin really good for a very long time.
And the beauty of it is, too, through the years, because there were so many years, obviously, with Coach Bo Ryan's teams and with Greg, there would be years where there's the separation between the leading scorer and maybe the fifth, really, it's narrow.
Exactly.
Now, you have outlier years, like Johnny Davis a couple years ago, so on and so forth. But the thing is, we've seen in a lot of these years where you could have great balance, but someone could just go off on a given night.
Correct, exactly. And then we're starting to get that feel a little bit where you're going to have guys, like we've talked a lot about Big Steve, and, he 6 points, like four shots. Mm-hmm. Tough game for him. Just the speed of their bigs and what they were trying to do, just a tough game. There's going to be a game that he goes off. There's going to be different opportunities for so many of these guys. And I'm starting to see the bits and pieces of the balance. And that's the exciting part. When we opened this season off on Monday, I said, we get to sit back. How lucky are we? We get to sit back and see this team grow and see this game, this team evolve. We're starting to see it through two games. Mm-hmm. And I am so excited to be able to follow this journey that they're on, because from Monday to Thursday, they've gotten better.
They have.
Now from Thursday to Sunday, are they going to get better? I got a funny feeling knowing that coaching staff, knowing Coach Carr, they're going to get better again. And that's all you ask for as a coach, is to keep having your guys buy in and want to get better every single day you get a chance to work with them.
All right, Wisconsin defeats Montana State 79-67. We continue. We'll get a glance at the Nissan out-of-town scoreboard. This is Badger basketball from Learfield.
Sports allow us to play, learn, and grow. But there's something more important than victory. At the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, we believe every athlete deserves to be safe. Safe from abuse and misconduct on and off the field. We equip athletes, parents, coaches, and others with the right education to recognize, prevent, and respond to harmful behavior. Join the movement to champion respect and end abuse at uscenterforsafesport.org.
Hi, this is Beth, your new host for The Kitchen is Open, the award-winning show within the morning show. Each Monday morning at 9 a.m., we'll tackle topics, teach techniques, and tell you what to do or not to do when it comes to cooking or the kitchen. I'll also bring you interviews with local chefs and restaurant owners with insight on what it takes to make it in the food industry. Listen as I work with James, Seth, and others as we learn, laugh, and have fun. The Kitchen is Open. Same kitchen, new host.
Forrester and the Ad Council.
Let's take a look at our Nissan out-of-town scoreboard. One other Big Ten game has gone final. Iowa, a winner over Southern tonight, 89-74. Price Sanford, Peyton Sanford's little brother. Peyton still
went
out, by the way.
Yeah, he went on. Yep. He went
22.
High, yep.
So, 22 for Price, yep. 8 out of 10. Peyton was he had 17 points, 7 assists, 8 rebounds, so kind of flirting with a triple-double there today as the Hawkeyes move on. Michigan State up big over Niagara as they get late in East Lansing, 86-58, and USC and Idaho State just getting started. A number of games tomorrow involving Big Ten teams, including UCLA and New Mexico, Montana on the home court against Oregon. Illinois will play SIU Edwardsville. You got Maryland, Purdue, and Penn State also in action tomorrow. Every night is in play because that's the way it's supposed to be. And that is your Nissan Out of Town scoreboard. We're filling a couple minutes here as Greg Gard makes his way courtside as the Badgers improve to 2-0. The Appalachian State game, by the way, Sunday morning. Remember, the Packers are idle, so you make it a basketball.
You're going to bring me breakfast too then? I mean, you brought me cookies. I mean,
I give you something and you just want more. Gimme.
If it's free, I'll take three. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Typical media. 10 a.m. air and 11 a.m. tip, by the way, for the Badgers at Appalachian State as Coach Gard joins us courtside. Wisconsin 79, Montana State 67. Your final score. Well, we talked before the game. Greg, you knew this was going to be a heck of a test for your guys. You passed. I mean, what did you like most about how your team went about winning this thing?
You know, I thought defensively we got better. It's good that sometimes it's good when they hit shots on you when you make mistakes, because then it reinforces why we do what we do when we do it. You know, it seemed like every screen we went under in the first half, intentional or not intentional, we were taking the ball out of the net. So, you know, obviously I rode experience in those situations as we came, you know, the second half specifically because of how they play. Typically inexperienced younger guys kind of get spinning in circles, especially when you have that many shooters on the floor and the actions they run. So the guys that have been embedded in our rules and how we do things, and when we did it really well, I thought. And obviously we got the ball to go in and made shots. Klesman, welcome back. And, you know, did a lot of good things, a lot of things to get better at, but that's a good team. I mean, that's a NCAA tournament team, and they'll see what happens in their league. Obviously, they'll have to win their tournament, but you can tell just the experience on the floor, how old they are. Don't get rattled, run good stuff, got a lot of shooters, so it's a good test for us.
We talked a lot about it. I said it was a workman's-like game for you guys.
Right.
Like, you followed the game plan as far as everything that you've done. A team that likes to get out and shoot threes. You didn't give up hardly any transition threes.
Right.
I think the first three you gave up was
second half.
3 minutes left.
Right
in the
down
second
here.
Half. Yep, right there. Yeah. Exactly. I think it was like 3 minutes left. Like
photographic memory, Brian. I know, like the old guy that coached you too. Remember all the bad.
Oh yeah, and then I'll see it 3-4 times during film the next day. I would, but when you have a game plan like that, and your guys follow it the way that they do, how much does that make you really feel like these guys are buying in to everything that you're preaching every day?
Oh, they're buying in. They just don't know.
Exactly.
It's not that we're getting any resistance. They just don't know.
But it helps, right? Like,
absolutely.
When you have the results to back up
everything
you're saying.
And that's what I told them in the locker room.
Yeah.
I said the reason I didn't go with some of you inexperienced or younger guys, you saw what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, the older guys have been there, done that, and understand specifically when you're – you know, you make one mistake and it's 3 points, and the way they can light the scoreboard up, I wasn't going to, you know, we weren't going to get into that if we could help it. We're not getting into a 3-point contest. We have to make sure they have to guard us, and let's make sure. I thought, you know, obviously we get up a couple there late when we had it at, 18 or so, and they caught it back to 12. But I think all in all, it's a step forward, you know, and a lot of good things on film that we'll be able to see, things that we did well and things we got to continue to clean up.
Yeah, they only took 9 threes in the second half. I'm sure they wanted to take more than
right.
You guys through the years, it's been part of the DNA, not allowing a lot of those
exactly.
attempts.
Exactly. We focus more on minimizing attempts than what their shooting percentage is. You know, we still want to – there's a couple I'm sure we could – that percentage will come into play in terms of we could have taken it away better. But like I said, the least three in the first half were miscues on our part. And but we learned from it, and we got better as the game went on.
You guys have done such a good job of getting to the free throw line. What have you guys done so well to get there?
Well, I think the combination of the spacing of the floor, I think that's important. I think you got to put pressure on the rim. And there's a variety of ways you can do it. Obviously, the ball screen stuff, we've had bigs on the rim. The ability to drive it on the back of those ball screens. You know, the ability with some slide screening with the fours, you know, to create double gaps, those type of things. So, and then the good old-fashioned just roll it into the big guys, you know, let them go to work. So It's a combination, you know, it's a combination. I think when spacing and if we can shoot the ball, you know, I think we got good shooters. And we got a lot of them. I'd like to get more guys more minutes, especially Amos and Ilver have played well enough to get more minutes. But, I got to continue to make sure we're on the right-hand side. That's the most goal number
just
one.
Just win the game.
We'll experiment at other points in time.
That's right. Close scrimmages and stuff like that. That's a good time.
But they got to keep getting better, as I told them. And same thing with guys in the backcourt that didn't get a lot of time or any time because it's a long season and we're going to need everybody.
All right. And fairly quick turn here. You got App State coming in Sunday morning.
Another good team that was
unknown too, with so many new faces, right? So
right.
That theme continues mm-hmm. here for a bit.
Yeah, it didn't take much to remind what league they came out of, and that they had mm-hmm. swept the team that we ended our season last mm-hmm. year. So and that's a good team. I watched them on tape last year. They were really good when we were getting ready for JMU, but. Yeah, we'll enjoy this one tonight and start getting ready for App State tomorrow.
Sounds good. Appreciate your time, as always. Badgers head coach Greg Gard joining us courtside. Wisconsin 79, Montana State 67. More as the Wisconsin Ford Dealers postgame show continues. This is Badger basketball from Learfield.
Join the Wisconsin Department of Corrections and make a positive impact on lives across the state. Enjoy an excellent state benefits package and a nationally ranked pension program. The Wisconsin DOC is hiring probation and parole agents with a starting pay of $22 per hour plus scheduled increases, a Monday through Friday schedule, and advancement opportunities. To learn more and to apply, go to wisc.jobs. That's WISC.jobs.
Coors Light presents To Chill or Not to Chill. When your friend skips your favorite song on the playlist. End the friendship. Or choose Chill because that song lives rent-free in your head anyway. And you planned ahead by bringing Coors Light to the party. And the sound of that ice-cold can cracking open was music to your ears already. Coors Light. Choose Chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2024 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Finding the right gift is getting tougher than ever. And who's got the time? That's why more people are shopping online every year. But where do you start? How about the taste of the holidays? Usinger's famous sausage. If you've ever received a Usinger gift box, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They ship anywhere in the continental U.S., and they come in a variety of prices and styles. Go ahead, be a holiday hero, the one who sends the perfect gift. Visit Usinger.com. That's Usinger.com or Google Milwaukee's famous sausage.
Are you seeking a better career? Rail Transport offers truck drivers a variety of driving jobs earning top wages. No CDL? No problem. Get paid to get your CDL with Rail's on-the-job paid training program. We're also seeking top talent for driver and customer support positions. To see all the career opportunities at Rail and how you can take home more and be home more, visit rail.jobs. That's rail.jobs. Rail Transport is a proud sponsor of the Badgers.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison, home of the Big Win and Madison Casino Guru, is transforming guests into winners, making an ordinary day into a big win day is easy with a 95% average payout. And with over 140 daily jackpots, the number of people winning has never been bigger. So what are you waiting for? Escape to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison for your next big win.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison.
Wisconsin is home to some of the best educators in the country. The Outstanding Educator Program is brought to you by WEA Member Benefits, proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. Throughout the season, we are honoring incredible educators who go above and beyond for their students and communities. Do you know an educator who deserves the spotlight? Nominate them today at uwbadgers.com/outstandingeducator. That's uwbadgers.com/outstandingeducator. Because great educators make Wisconsin proud.
Our Wisconsin Ford Dealers postgame show continues as the Badgers knock off Montana State 79-67. Wisconsin 45% from the floor for the game, 11-22 from 3 and 20 of 21 at the free throw line. 36 out of 37 of the Badgers through the first two games of the season from the stripe. Montana State 44% from the floor, 12 of 26 from 3, 7 of 10 at the free throw line. Badgers a +5 on the glass.
Turnover count, 11 for the Badgers, 14 for the Bobcats, 15 assists for Wisconsin, and 12 dimes for Montana State. So 2-0, try to move on to 3-0 on Sunday, again an 11 a.m. tip, so our coverage starts at 10 for the Badgers and Appalachian State. It was a 27-win team last year. Dustin Kearns doing terrific work down there. The Mountaineers, but they lost in the conference tournament, thus got into the NIT. But they had a ton of players. They had seven players enter the portal. They have three D1 transfers, three junior college transfers, four freshmen. So, again, the scouting is strictly this year for the two games in for Appalachian State, and they'll come in 1-1.
Yeah, again, another good test for this team, though. And that's what you want. Like, the way the schedule's been built this year, five straight home games for this team. You get to find out who you are before you head to Greenbrier tournament that you're going to be playing in. And that, like, great teams that, like I said, I've said a lot this year, but great teams of Wisconsin, they've kind of have done that, built that out. Obviously a great test against Arizona at home, but home games are going to help here.
All right. We'll take a break. Badgers win it by 12. Back to close things out in 1 minute. This is Badger basketball from Learfield.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. A lot of financial chatter is focused on the stock market. Is it up? Is it down? Is it a bull market? Is it a bear market? The Dow just hit a record high. But how much should people like me and you really care about these daily updates? The answer? Not very much. Most of those daily highs and lows come from small-scale events that just don't mean that much to the broader U.S. economy. And the stock market is not the economy. For most of us, long-term growth is what really matters for retirement. Now, if you are one of the richest 10% of Americans who own 93% of all the stock, you can ignore this message. But for the rest of us, we're going to get more done by keeping an eye on our spending and savings than we are by paying attention to Wall Street. For more practical money tips, visit workmoney.org. Till next time, take good care.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Wisconsin 79, Montana State 67, your final score. Reminder, we got Wisconsin hockey on many of these network stations tomorrow and Saturday. Border battle, part one, Badgers and the Gophers, third-ranked Minnesota. Coming to the Kohl Center, Brian Posick, Ian Perrin will have the call. They drop the puck at 7 o'clock tomorrow and 6 o'clock on Saturday. When was the last hockey game you were at here?
Oh, it's been a long time.
Been a minute?
It has.
You know, you should come back.
I should. You should. You're right. Yep. Yeah. I should.
You got a busy schedule, I know. But
well, maybe I come down Saturday night, spend the night at your house. We're ready to go on Sunday.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
You want to do it?
I'll be out of town.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, it's a bye week. What do you mean? Where are you out of town? It's a bye week. You should be at home. I can come over. You
know, Dave had a great suggestion. Dave McCann, you can come over and put up our Christmas lights. So I appreciate it. Thanks,
buddy. Might not even need a ladder.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that. Wisconsin a winner over Montana State 79-67. Aren't you glad you hung through that last commercial break to get that? You can't get this kind of commentary just anywhere, I'm telling you. Badgers win it by 12. That'll do it for us, mercifully so. This broadcast is a copyrighted presentation of Badger Sports Properties, a property of Learfield under the broadcasting rights granted by the University of Wisconsin. Rebroadcast or reuse of this presentation is prohibited without the express written consent of the University of Wisconsin and Badger Sports Properties. The announcers are employed by the Badger Network with the approval of the University of Wisconsin. The general manager of Badger Sports Properties is Scott Silvestri. For Brian Butch, our engineer Dave McCann, and Aisha Jackson back in our network studio, this is Matt LePay, hoping you'll join us on Sunday morning as the Badgers take on Appalachian State. Thanks for listening. This is the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Badger basketball has been brought to you by Alliant Energy. Alliant Energy is powering beyond for you. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison and Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin Dells. Proud casino partners of Wisconsin Athletics. And by Fabic Rents. For all your equipment rental needs throughout Badgerland. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Badger Sports Network.
because the one we have now isn't working. You know, the one that gave us Hillary Clinton and the one that gave us Kamala Harris. And I'm not saying this is knocks on them. I think they're both very fine human beings. I think they would have been very good presidents. But that structure isn't working for us. So we have to figure out, whether it's within the Democratic Party, which I guess is easier, or whether it's happened in this country before in the 1850s, whether a new party somehow needs to be forged out of this wreckage because it's going to be bad. We need to start a political movement that figures out how to do some of these things that you're talking about, Rick, you know, about how to reach people where they are, and because we're not reaching them now, and how to talk about the things that they care about that we care about too, things that they want about improving their life economically. You know, we want those, liberals, even liberals who are not in organized labor, they're not working class, they're maybe upper class liberals, but they say they support a higher minimum wage, they support the ability to organize unions more easily. All right, well, put your money where your mouth is, and let's work for those things and show some solidarity.
Yeah. But none of those people are going to be in power. I mean, this is my problem. The argument that the left is dead, because I've been being inundated with, can we now put the leftism inside it? It's dead. You know, we need a labor party. We need another party. The Democrats are dead. This is the message right now that I'm getting, and I don't necessarily agree. But one thing
that people talked about a lot in 2016, and you did actually see some of this, I have to say, and it's what you can do is, liberals, the left, whatever, does have power in cities, in some states, California and New York, two of our biggest states, are led by Democrats, and the Democrats who lead them right now are not good, especially in New York. But I'm not a big fan of Gavin Newsom either. So, the leadership is terrible, but, we have the power to elect leaders in those places like next year starting next year in New York.
So I want to get back to Tuesday.
In New York City,
right.
who can demonstrate what actual successful policies for working middle class people can do.
Well, I would argue we saw that in Michigan, and Michigan still went for Trump. I mean, this is the weird part in all this. I thought Gretchen Whitmer and the Democratic House and Senate there did a phenomenal job, only to not see Michigan go for Harris.
And it gets back to the start of this. It's a media communication thing where people see things in a national lens, and I think more importantly, people see things in a cultural lens, which is tribal in nature, right? Yeah. It's like, it's great that you passed the minimum wage or you did some of these other things, but I got to stick with my tribe,
No, it's a good point. So let me ask you a last line of questioning, because ultimately the polling was really bad. Because look,
unbelievably so, and this whole Ann Selzer thing in Iowa is one of the most shocking things I've ever seen. I don't understand it. I mean, there needs to be, clearly this election, it showed that, both the polling industry, but also the obsession with polls and the media and whoever else is obsessed with polls, the whole thing is broken. It's got to disappear. It's got to go away.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. And the other thing is, near and dear to my heart is, we learned so much about the mainstream media in this cycle, not doing a good job. And the thing is, I mean, the mainstream media has kind of worked itself into a position of irrelevancy, you know. And I think, I mean, the Harris campaign pretty much bypassed the mainstream media because it said, well, who really needs them? Who really needs the aggravation at this point of dealing with these people?
There you go. And so,
you know, and every crisis is an opportunity. I mean, you know, there's an opportunity if a new media world is being created as we speak, that there's an opportunity to put, you know, a pro working people, pro middle class, more progressive stamp on that new media. So let's get to work on that.
There you go. You know? Will, I appreciate the time, man. As always, great stuff. Hope people will check out your latest piece. Be honest, America. This is who we are. A bitter, broken land that wants Trump to lead us, over at the Philly Inquirer. Will, thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to hear your thoughts. You agree with Will? I mean, are we bitter and broken? I don't know. You look at the results on Tuesday. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Hey there. It's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and an answer to the question, how often should I take my car in to get it serviced? As somebody who's worked on cars and knows...
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly clear, a low in the mid-30s. Mostly sunny and a little warmer tomorrow, a high to the mid-50s. Then rain chances return for the weekend, highs near 50. Dry weather returns for Monday and on into Tuesday, with more rain possible into Wednesday. It's 42 right now.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said, sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
One of the areas I think we are most certainly going to need to organize around is protecting Social Security and Medicare. Because look, the right has had a wet dream for decades on destroying Social Security and Medicare. They were against it from the beginning. They've been against it all along. But oddly enough, come election time, they seem to find their way, you know, to saying, oh, we're the party of Social Security and Medicare. And, well, maybe the party that wants to destroy it. And here to share some thoughts on what he thinks the coming months and, well, 4 years are going to bring to us, as my good friend Alex Lawson to come share some thoughts. Alex is the executive director of Social Security Works. You can check out their website, socialsecurityworks.org. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be here. It's a pretty brutal day, but happy to speak with you, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, look, the aftermath of Tuesday's election, it's going to have some consequences. And one of those consequences could be more privatization of Medicare, could be, you know, some type of privatization of Social Security. There's a lot on the table now that, well, we are where we are.
Yeah, I think privatization of Medicare is it's going to be full steam ahead from, you know, the word go. It's really clearly laid out in Project 2025. It's what President Trump did when he was last in the Oval Office. They basically just put their thumb on the scale for corporate insurers to just gobble up more and more of traditional Medicare. And Medicare is already about 54% privatized. So they're not going to need to do too much more until it is in a full death spiral where you have, you know, if you only have 20% of people in traditional Medicare, that's going to generally be the sickest, the oldest, those who need the most care. It's not a large enough risk pool to really work, and it begins a death spiral in health policy terms. So that is, I mean, that's right away, and that's separate from also, you know, his concepts of a plan is just to destroy anything that puts brakes or checks on the corporate insurers from controlling every aspect of our healthcare. So getting rid of traditional Medicare, that's, you know, a huge part of it, but also going back to when there were no checks on corporate insurers for denying people for pre-existing conditions and all the other things that they got away with. And, you know, right now we don't have good healthcare in this country. We pay the most in the world and we have the worst outcomes in our peer nations. And it's just going to get worse. So that's a very bleak road. We will be doing everything we can to fight against that as we did last time. I think they will probably just try to repeal the ACA. They're definitely going to try to repeal the Inflation Reduction Act, get rid of Medicare's ability to negotiate drug prices. You know, their DOJ is going to be in charge of defending against the lawsuits from the pharmaceutical corporations against Medicare drug price negotiation, which I'm sure they're going to sit on their hands. And so, you know, what we're going to see is privatized Medicare, drug prices going up, corporate insurers feeling like they can do whatever they want. And let me be clear, what they want to do is to deny healthcare to those who need it most. That's how they make money.
Yeah.
On Social Security, it's a similarly bleak picture. It is a little bit more protected because even under the worst scenario, there is not 60 votes in the Senate for the Republicans. We don't really know what's happened in the House yet. We might not know for a bit because of California. If they have a trifecta, I don't think they come for Social Security through the front door immediately. I think healthcare and tax cuts are the big thing. So they'll let the ACA subsidies expire and they'll re-up the tax giveaway to billionaires, maybe add on some more to that. They'll attack Social Security through the side door, as they always do, death by a thousand cuts. You know, they'll go after the commissioner, Martin O'Malley, probably fire him and replace him, maybe put their old guy, Andrew Saul, back in, demoralize the workforce, bust the union. They have the lowest staffing rate in decades, even as 10,000 baby boomers retire every day. And so it's a real crisis at Social Security, and they'll just sort of keep ramping that crisis up and then try to get to a place where they can, you know, demand the crisis that they created. Right. To push through changes. The old mail, kneecap the mailman and then complain that the mail is late.
No, I mean, we've broken it. It doesn't work. So we need to privatize it so we can profitize it. And look, I mean, it's glaring. It's right in front of us. We know this. And yet still, somehow, here we are. But again, I go through this campaign. You saw Republicans actually running on, they're the party of Social Security, which is really kind of freaky.
I was there, Rick. I spent, you know, I did a 1,900-mile tour through Montana 7 days. Seven events in 5 days all across that state. And what I found everywhere, first of all, Sheehy, who is going to be the next senator in Montana, ran his TV ads, his first tier one TV ads, the main buys, were on Social Security. They were saying he's the guy who's going to protect it. And Senator Tester was going to give it away to the illegals. That was their big line this whole time. Trump was sending mailers on that in Pennsylvania, in Milwaukee, in Michigan, in Wisconsin. You know, people were sending us the mailers and they're like, we just got this in the mail. So it said, you know, Trump's going to protect Social Security and Kamala's going to destroy it by giving it away to so-called illegals. And I heard that every time I went out and I worked rooms with retirees in Ohio, in Michigan, in Montana. And that was the question. You know, that's what people would say. They're like, I'd say, look, the issue is people only pay in on the first $168,800 of income. After that, they don't pay in a nickel. So the billionaires, they finish paying in on like the first day of the year.
By lunch.
All we got to do is get them to pay the same rate as the rest of us. And there it is. We're the problem solved. And people would, like some sizable percentage of them would shake their head. And the questions I would always get were, well, what about all of these illegals who are taking our benefits? And it was just, it really got into people's brains and it was not effectively challenged. And how this works when you have huge media platforms to just blast that into people's brains. And the response is actually somewhat more complicated. So it's like that intuitive lie beats the non-intuitive truth every time.
Yep.
Right. So like by law, undocumented or unauthorized immigrants, as they're called officially, cannot get benefits, but they pay in to the tune of tens of billions of dollars a year.
Yeah. Now you're just making sense.
I know.
But because that doesn't fit the narrative. The narrative is, we're giving, every person thousands of dollars the second they walk across the border. We're taking care of them from cradle to grave. We're doing all the things for them that they think our government should be doing for them. But we're not doing it for them or the other ones. But the jealousy angle is just, palpable.
It is. And it worked. I mean, I saw that all of my work did not come to that much. But I told people, my line, you don't have to be worried about an immigrant coming to this country and taking your Social Security. You got to be worried about a billionaire taking your Social Security because they're working day and night.
Yep.
to do just that. I would get some nodding heads, but it just wasn't when you don't have, think about this. And I know, Rick, the billionaire who's going to be put in charge of the commission to find $3 trillion of quote unquote savings. That means our money. That's what they're going to find in the couch cushion is Elon Musk. Elon Musk spent $44 billion of basically fake money based on Tesla's valuation to buy Twitter to win Donald Trump the election. And he did. That's what they understand. The billionaires understand that in order to win, you need to talk to people. And that asymmetry that we continue to face is devastating. So even if the Democrats were totally on the right message all the time, which we can debate whether they were. I wish they had more mail on Social Security, for example. I wish they ran harder on healthcare, for example. Those are winners. But even if they were perfectly on message with the platform asymmetry, it's unclear that anyone would have heard the right message.
No, and this is where I come back to what happened to our healthy skepticism. What happened to when I say this all the time. I've been saying it a lot more the last couple of days. One of my grandfather's favorite quotes was, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket and tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it because they understand return on investment. His generation knew if the boss was telling you something that was in his best interest, it was not in yours. This is that kind of scenario. When did we lose that skepticism of extreme wealth and what their vision for the country is?
Yeah, I wrestle with that often, Rick. And I'm like, I should ask you. You seem like you have a better handle on it. You might be able to tell me. But I've wondered this forever. I was over in Glasgow, Scotland a while ago. But just the general vibes there, if you're just talking to like a random person in a restaurant or a bar, it's just like written in their bones. Like, oh yeah, if the boss says that, then the boss, don't believe it. They're the boss. Why would you believe the boss? They're not on your side. Are you the boss? Are you the billionaire? But in America, there's this bootlicker mentality that is just like the billionaires say things and these stridently not billionaires, right? The furthest thing from a billionaire who are just willing to take a bullet for these guys. And you're like, they don't care about you at all, at all. And still it's like, oh yeah, I think it's probably the immigrants who took my job and sent it overseas. You're like, how'd they do that? I'm pretty sure it was the bosses who did that. They're the ones with the power and the money that make those decisions.
Yeah.
But that class understanding and solidarity has eroded to an enormous point here in the U.S. And I think you saw that yesterday.
Yeah. Well, whose fault is that then? Is it the Democratic Party's fault because they used to be a much more strong party for working class values? Is it the fact that labor unions have shrunk down to 6.5% in the private sector? Is it, the fact that we've been told for 40, 50 odd years that we're all going to be rich? That our religion is preaching prosperity gospel, that everything is the worship of wealth?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is, I think it's probably a little bit of all of those. You know, I'm a firm, staunch supporter of Bernie Sanders' point that until the Democratic Party fully embraces and pushes every day as the party of the working class, then the Democratic Party is going to lose. And there has been a realignment. You can see it. The Democrats are now winning college-educated folks at huge margins and losing people without college education, working class people. And, the policies, the policies could not be more stark. The Democrats are absolutely, even with all of the corporate Dems in there, between the two parties, there's only one of them that pushes the PRO Act, right? There's only one of them that actually tries to do stuff for organized labor. There's only one of them who, bailed out the Teamsters pensions, I say bail out on purpose because I want people to think of it as usually only the banks get bailed out. But in this case, the pensions did, which is exactly what should happen. The Republicans are absolutely, by policy and agenda, anti-working class. But they've, it's like a bunch of the elitist of the elites. These are Yaleys, Harvard, skull and bones types who play dummies on TV. And they're good at it. They're good at, they eat their crumpets in their private clubs in Washington, D.C. And then they go on television and they talk like dummies. To try to connect with people, and it works. But I also will, there's a erosion of identity in this country, and I think that is through a variety of reasons, but primarily it's actually to sell us stuff. It's again with the financialization of every aspect of our lives. We're just hit with just an unending amount of propaganda advertising that defines us only as consumers, right? Our job is to go to work, to make money, to buy things that we generally don't need. And when you don't have an identity, a purpose, something larger than yourself, being part of something, then it is very easy for a con man, for a con man, an autocrat, somebody to give you the identity. Follow me. I'll be your identity. You don't need to worry about being adrift and what is your purpose because I'll be your purpose. And until we really have a deeper conversation about how we can instill the purpose of solidarity amongst the people, I do think we will be in a series of losses for a while.
Yeah, I mean, well, the commodification of just about everything, education, healthcare, all of it, instead of, things being about the commons and how we have a functional society, it's about who's going to get rich off of it. So leave me with some hope here, Alex, because I know
tough.
A lot of people are struggling. We've been in this moment somewhat before. The assaults on Social Security and Medicare have been ongoing. Give me some hope here.
Yeah, I mean, the hope is the sort of something that you said before. I mean, the Republicans know they can't come at the things that are deeply loved by the American people straight on. So we have to be sophisticated in fighting back. But we know that Social Security is massively popular. You can see it annoyingly again in the results last night. You have ballot measures of things that are really progressive, right? Like the values under these ballot measures that which passed enormously. And at the same time, people voted for Donald Trump. So people are thinking that Donald Trump is somehow the person who's associated with things like raising the minimum wage,
yep,
protecting Social Security, protecting Medicare. When their agenda is opened to the people, then the people do rally to fight back against that. So the hope is solidarity. And in that solidarity, we will win. But it will be bleak, Rick, and we will have to brace ourselves for incredibly tough times. And we'll have to find our community and stand with our community. But in that solidarity, that's where the hope lies.
Yeah, now is not the time to bury your head. Now is not the time to leave social media or flee the country or any of the other nonsense that I've been seeing. Now is the time to get up, dust yourself off, take a deep breath, and keep moving forward.
I couldn't agree more, Rick.
There you go. Alex, I appreciate the time. As always, great seeing you. Hope you'll come back again real soon.
Thanks a lot.
Our good friend Alex Lawson. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you think, really, honestly, is there anybody who believes that the Republicans are going to be the party to save Social Security and Medicare? Or is Alex right? It's all on the block. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1990. That was the day that Lemuel Rickett Boulware died. Boulware had a notorious reputation with labor leaders. He was the vice president for employee relations for General Electric during the 1950s. He took the lead on labor for the company in 1947, a year after a 17-week bitter strike at General Electric. Determined not to have another such strike, Boulware cultivated his own brand of labor relations. He advocated doing extensive research and offering what he called a fair, firm offer at the bargaining table. This meant the company would essentially give their final offer on the first day of bargaining and hold nothing back for future negotiations. This take-it-or-leave-it approach came to be known as Boulwerism. Other companies copied his tactic. Boulware came to be regarded as a master negotiator by corporate leaders. He was known for writing internal communications to GE employees with catchphrases advocating management's position on labor issues. In 1969, at the AFL-CIO convention in Atlantic City, Paul Jennings, the president of the Industrial Union of Electrical Workers, derided Boulware's tactics. Jennings described it as telling the workers what they're entitled to and trying to shove it down their throats. Boulware once described fair share unionism as wrong in principle and bad in practice. He is credited with helping to move Ronald Reagan to a more conservative approach to labor. Reagan went to work as a spokesperson for General Electric in 1954. At the time, Reagan had been a Democrat and also president of his union, the Screen Actors Guild. During his time at GE, he moved increasingly to the radical right, especially on labor issues. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the commodification of everything that we take for granted today, I mean, understand, when Republicans are running on Social Security, that they're going to be the saviors? Man, we've lost the message. And I come back to what we've been talking about today. The reality is, and you have to give them credit, the very wealthy in this country have invested their money in a very smart way. They have purchased our media and then told us it's all bad. They have controlled what we see, hear, and read, and then have told us it's all bad. So that there's no fact, there's no check on anything anymore. There's just blind faith belief. And then they feed this void with misinformation and alternative reality. And they've been doing this for years. It's not new. It's just amazing how well it's worked. And understand, you know, when I started this program, you know, nearly 20 years ago, we're coming up on, you know, about in March of 05 is when, you know, the brainstorm, you know, came to me and we began moving in the direction for a Labor Day of 05 launch. It was because all of my truck driver buddies were telling me things that you could not verify anywhere but right-wing talk radio. There were no experts who were going to write a paper that the periodical was going to review and publish. There were no broad-based consensus on what they were being sold. They were being sold grievance. They were being puffed up with hyper-individualism. And it's where we are. Look, it worked masterfully. They did an amazing job. And so much so that we, as a society, we have allowed this kind of misinformation to permeate everything we do, even our politics. The fact that Fox News has on a good night, 3 million viewers, and they set the political discourse for 300 million plus of us, pretty impressive and extremely powerful. The fact that we don't talk to each other anymore, we're all on our devices. And what should help us communicate better doesn't seem to do that. Now, when you talk to people face-to-face about issues, and I do this every chance I get, when you talk about the issues that are important, healthcare, education, public safety, jobs, the future of the country and manufacturing, you know, all of these things that are important to people, the economy, what kind of an economy do we want? Universally, they come back to what are very democratic, very liberal kind of ideologies. But when they vote and they tell you, in that first inch of water, what they believe, it's all this misinformation. All this stuff that comes from these other quote-unquote news sources. And I've always believed, as someone who's fairly liberal, that more speech is better than less. I'm not someone who believes we censor. Not somebody who believes we shut things down. I'm somebody who says you got to get in there and you got to argue more. You got to make your case better. And this, I guess, is the wake-up call for Democrats, isn't it? This is the wake-up call for the left, for progressives, for the labor community. This is very much the moment where talking to people, finding that common ground, where it's going to be so important. Or we're going to end up looking backwards going, how did all of this happen? Because it never fails. I'll go into a major city and we'll talk about parking and everybody's against privatizing the parking authority. Everybody. How did it happen? Well, it happened because Republicans were able to starve city government of resources. They were able to continue to, squeeze the beast, to where eventually you had to start paying, you had to start selling things off. We were all about tax cuts for the very wealthy, all about giveaways for corporate America, all about pushing the can down the road. And then, well, what do you do when you get into trouble? You got to sell off your assets. It's the one thing that Dennis Kucinich, as mayor of Cleveland, wouldn't allow. And it's the reason he got thrown out as mayor, and then there was the reason that the city loved him afterwards. When he wouldn't sell off Muni Light to pay off the city's minor debt, they put the city into bankruptcy because they wanted it. The rich, the powerful, the corporate interests want the commons. They want what's ours. And I'm hoping at some point we come back to each other and understand it's not right, left. It's not Democrat, Republican. It's always been up, down. It's always been the wealthy against the rest of us. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.